You've probably at least heard of this story. This is the real story behind the Naked Ladies cult in Corvallis in the early 1900s. I'm serious. It really existed. But the ladies weren't really naked. Let me tell you a little bit more about it. Led by a man named Edmund Creffield, his Bride of Christ Church broke up families, sanctioned adultery, and inspired deadly violence in the early 20th century. Ironically, its practitioners' goal was perfect holiness and godliness. It is a hell of a story, even without it being augmented as it has been over the years by pulp fiction writers. Let me tell you all about it in a minute, but first of all, let me introduce myself. My name is Finn J.D. John, and I do a weekly newspaper column called Offbeat Oregon History. This weekly column got started in 2008, runs in about a dozen community newspapers around the state every week, telling the stories of Oregon history that nobody knows about. Stories of heroes and rascals, and shipwrecks and lost gold, and Shanghaied sailors and Skid Road bordellos, and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries, and all sorts of good stuff like that. Now this RSS feed is a daily feed, and it brings you a column from our archive every morning in your choice of text and pictures or audio-only formats, and you are, of course, right now listening to the audio version. So now let's hear a little bit more about this Naked Ladies cult, or so-called. Here's the story. In the years after one-time Corvallis resident F. Edmund Creffield died, his legend got weirder and weirder. But then it was pretty darn weird to start with, and it was not the kind of story that mellows with age. By 1951, 45 years later, it reached something of a high watermark, if high is the right word, in an article in Shocking Detective magazine headlined Nemesis of the Nudist High Priest. Shocking Detective, in case you are wondering, was a pulp title. The article paints a fantastic picture of a lascivious con man posing as a holy man, sharking up a flock of the town's comelier ladies and preying upon their weak feminine minds with a diabolical message. Clothing is vanity. Let's all get naked and roll on the floor. It gets worse. This article goes on to relate how the prophet Creffield, calling himself the new Joshua, convinced the lucky ladies that one of them was going to be the new Mary, mother of the next Jesus, and that he himself, Edmund Creffield, would be standing in for the good Lord in making the necessary carnal arrangements so that that could happen. So, this thoroughly untrustworthy account continues, Creffield started a selection process, in which the brainwashed beauties were, if you will, auditioned, naked of course, behind closed doors, in a process that sometimes involved whips. No, really. The whips were a nifty addition to a yarn that was first set to paper by legendary Oregon writer Stuart Holbrook in 1941. Holbrook, delightful though he is to read, simply cannot be trusted on stories that touch on religion, and if I were compelled to defend that statement in court, his version of this story would be Exhibit A. In it, he is remarkably snarky and very eager to believe and pass on the most lascivious and scandalous of the many rumors that float out of this case. The real story of Creffield's cult, which came to be known as the Bride of Christ Church, is quite a bit more believable than this, and more nuanced. It certainly relies a lot less on the once prominent myth that women are naturally gullible, stupid, and absent the steadying hand of a man, easily led into promiscuity and sin. In other words, if you're female, you'll find the real story a lot less insulting. But the real story is, if anything, even more disturbing than the augmented ones, because it lacks the comforting feel of stereotype and fantasy. It's a story of good-hearted, well-meaning people who, in the name of goodness and holiness, opened the door to evil and chaos. The story, if you will, of how the saintly can become the tools of Satan. The story starts in 1903, when Creffield, a 30-ish native of Germany, burning with religious fervor, left the Salvation Army because he thought they weren't holy enough. He settled in Corvallis and started preaching, building a flock of super strict believers. Creffield's followers were like the most hardcore Pentecostalists you can imagine. At the same time, their extreme simplicity made the plain-dressing Quakers look like French royal courtiers by comparison. They prayed face down on the floor, occasionally rolling over in a sort of power grovel, hence the pejorative term holy roller, which may have actually started with this very group. Their church services were loud, sincere, and disruptive to the neighbors, full of wailing and gnashing of teeth, and they lasted for hours on end, dragging on into the night until the wee small hours of the morning. Corvallis residents at first got along reasonably well with their new freakishly hyper-holy neighbors, but things started going sour within just a few months. The main reason was Creffield taught that believers were to have nothing to do with unbelievers. That meant that if wives joined the group, they were to cut off contact with their husbands and families unless they joined too. For children, ditto. Well, here's how that worked out in Corvallis. A married couple would join the church. After a while, the man would get tired of the extreme self-denial and subjugation to the will of Creffield and drift off. His wife would then, at some point, identify him as a non-believer and cut him off. If there were children involved, they would either stay in the church and be cut off from their father, or leave the church and be abandoned by their mother. It was not a healthy dynamic, no matter how it played out. Soon, Creffield had a reputation for breaking up homes, and a flock consisting largely of women, women who actively avoided their infidel family members. It also bothered the rest of the community that Creffield's cult members were living in a communal house, women and men together. Moreover, their simple clothing consisted of a plain cloth wrapper which the outsiders felt was inadequate to protect female modesty and in any case looked entirely too easy to take off. That would be the source of the nakedness rumor. By itself, the communal living arrangements would have been bad enough, but Creffield's followers combined it with a mania for secrecy that all but invited other community members to fear the worst. Members vanished from their families' lives into a locked house with barred windows supervised only by the cult leader and his cronies. Things got worse. Following yet another pattern that would become all too familiar to the world in later decades, I mean, think David Koresh and Jim Jones, the lack of contact with the outside world and the unstinting adoration of his flock started doing things to the mind of the cult's leader. His message got increasingly unbiblical, as he claimed he was receiving instructions directly from God himself. He promoted himself up from the second Joshua to the second Elijah, which, if you know your Old Testament, is rather a big step up. Finally, the men of Corvallis organized a little party for Creffield. They marched him and his sidekick, Brooks, to the edge of town, stripped them naked, painted them with pine tar, covered them with feathers, and ordered them to get out of town and stay out of town. Creffield responded by appearing the very next day at the courthouse in Linn County, over in Albany, across the river. His skin was bright red from the scrubbing and reeking of the turpentine that was used to remove the tar. He was there to marry one of his followers, Maud, a daughter of the Hurt family of highly respected Corvallis pioneers. A few months later came the pivotal incident in our story, the incident that would doom Creffield and much of his flock. A man named Burgess Starr filed charges against Creffield for adultery, accusing Creffield of sleeping with his wife, Donna Starr. Creffield promptly went into hiding. Weeks later, he was found, naked and filthy, hiding in a coffin-sized hole under a follower's home in Corvallis. Hauled into court, Creffield unhesitatingly admitted guilt. It had been part of a vital, God-ordered purification ritual, he explained. This development, as you can imagine, electrified Corvallis. All over the area, people started making the same connections. They thought about all these women, refusing to speak to their husbands and fathers, praying and rolling around in somebody's house or on the sect's encampment on a secluded island in the Willamette, under the supervision of an avowed adulterer who saw nothing wrong with having sex with someone else's wife. Could it be Donna Starr wasn't the only one? Perhaps God was ordering Creffield to purify other women, too. Really, given the evidence, it would be hard to think otherwise. It was probably at this time that the rumors got started about Creffield's alleged plan to impregnate a selected follower on behalf of God Almighty. It's possible that this rumor was true, but I've found no solid evidence to back it up, and neither have Phillips and Gardner, who, for their book, Murdering Holiness, published out of University of British Columbia Press in 2003, spent a lot more time looking into it than I did. This is also certainly the moment at which cult members' ostracized male family members started thinking seriously about assassination as a solution to the Creffield problem. We'll talk about that, how that worked out, in part two of this report, which will be uploaded tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. That's it for today, and you can check out all the columns you can even cheat and go ahead and check out part two of this column by going to www.offbeatoregon.com. Both Offbeat Oregon du jour feeds are optimized for smartphone use, but they work great on a computer or netbook too. Also, everything here is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Thanks for listening. Drop me a line anytime at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. Especially if you're going to be in the Corvallis area and have time for a cup of coffee sometime. I'll be back around 6 a.m. with the second half of the Naked Ladies Church in Corvallis episode, and until then, happy trails!